Well, Jules, the roller coaster that are the 2025 Toronto Blue Jays continue, but this time we get the peak instead of the valley. The Jays winning a close one, 3-1 the final score over the O's, and after a lot of well-deserved angst when they lose, they somehow escape opening weekend with what feels like somewhat of an improbable series split against the O's, but a good thing nonetheless.
Seriously, just a sigh of relief for sure. I gotta say, and I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I've certainly thought it before.
Okay.
The Jays talk opening theme hits so much harder when they win. It's just like it's a really nice way to ring in a win, especially one to close out the first series of the year. So much happening in just the span of 4 days for this team. I think, you categorized it pretty well. We saw peaks, we saw valleys, we saw a little bit of everything, and it kind of sets you up for what's to come in a season that figures to be entertaining no matter what happens.
That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The People's Text Line, always open for your texting pleasure. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. As it is opening weekend, and I had said this yesterday, but I wanted to do a giveaway, but giveaways are less fun when the Jays lose. So we do have a giveaway for you guys today. Now, if you were at the ballpark on Friday, or if you were just watching on TV, see on social media, the giveaway was a Boba Shett layered City Connect jersey. So the best way to describe it, essentially was a jersey, the City Connect jersey with Bo's name and number on the back, on top of like a thin, long sleeve red hoodie, essentially, which is what they mean by layered, but they're like sewn into one another. They're not like two pieces of clothing, but anyways, that's what it is. But Tom Young kindly procuring one for us to give away, so thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
We will throw out a question after the break, so stay tuned for that, but all you'll have to do to be eligible to win is answer the question via the text line and we'll be off. So we'll ask a question, a player will be involved, you'll text that player's name to 590-590, name and location, and there you go. That's how it works.
I have to say, I'm excited because I did get a bit of a sneak preview of what the question is. It's a pretty interesting one. Gotta say, I didn't know the answer off the top of my head. Stay tuned. This should be fun.
It is a Tyler Heineman question.
Yeah, okay? That's
it's a Tyler Heineman related questions. There you go. You can start Googling things about Tyler Heineman if you want right now. But let's start with Chris Bassitt. On Jays Talk today, Jules, 6 innings from him, 1 run. It was earned, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, 106 pitches, 69 strikes. I mean, it wasn't the cleanest outing for Bassitt, certainly, with the 8 hits in there. But, I mean, he walked that tightrope. It felt like Bassitt had one or multiple base runners in basically every inning via a lot of singles. But, I mean, he got some timely defense to end Orioles rallies. He got some timely flyouts as well. You had said in the pregame that we should monitor Bassitt for the walks as well, something that he struggled with last year, and just 2 walks. And now, again, he let up the 8 hits, so some things to clean up for sure. But, I mean, you and I were sitting here talking about it in baseball control, and he finished the 5th inning at 88 pitches, and we were both kind of like, all right, well, how many more batters, how many more pitches is he going to be allowed here? How much longer is he going? But he managed to get the rest of the Orioles order, including that walk to Urias, and, you know, the bullpen looking how it does, Jimmy Garcia pitching on back-to-back days, that's got to be a good thing for everyone. Bassitt all the way down.
Yeah, I'd say that, the most important thing that Bassitt could have given the Blue Jays today was length, and he gave them so much more than that. Yes, granted, you know, there was a wild pitch in there that scored a run. The 8 hits don't look amazing on the box score, but when you consider that only one of them was for extra bases against a team that comes out swinging and swings hard, you have to consider that a win as well, Sho. And just basically, you know, commanding all of his pitches. Obviously, against a lineup like this, you're always sort of in danger. You always need to be very careful how you are mixing those pitches. We saw that as well from Bassitt, maybe staying away from the curveball in a couple of situations there where you had some speedy base runners on after that wild pitch and things of the sort. But really establishing a pitch such as the sinker and then coming back with the cutter was such an important pitch for him today. There is nothing quite like that slow curveball from Bassett. I just love seeing that and just how enticing it is for hitters, and they just absolutely cannot catch up with it because it's just so different from anything that major league hitters are accustomed to seeing. But we know that especially today's show, on the heels of Max Scherzer being placed on the 15-day IL, is still dealing with the thumb inflammation there. We knew how important this was for the Blue Jays to get a start of six innings at least from Bassett after Scherzer could only go three yesterday. The bullpen in kind of a precarious situation, just so much going on around this pitching staff. What you need is a stabilizer. What you need is a guy who gets the ball and says, leave it to me. And I think you and I both, when you know, he came back for the sixth and his pitch count is creeping up and then he allows a base runner to come into first base, and we just looked at each other and we said, okay, this is it, right? This is, it's 5 2/3 and that's it. They're going to pull him, and John Schneider and Pete Walker are just not even looking at each other, not even talking really, and just allowing Bassett to do his thing. He finishes at 105, I want to say. Was that it?
106.
Yeah. 106 pitches. So really, obviously, he worked for this in spring training. He worked to be maybe a little bit more stretched out than in past springs, just because of how the schedule is lined up. And then you get some bad news on your rotation. This is exactly what the Blue Jays needed. And what a season debut it was for Chris Bassett.
He threw 8 pitches today: cutter, sweeper, curve, sinker, splitter, four-seamer, slider, and the change. And again, I mean, he threw the changeup twice. He threw the slider 3 times. He threw the four-seamer 4 times. But, I mean, he got 42 sinkers from Bassett today of his 106 pitches. And, I mean, the sinker, it topped out at 93.5 miles an hour. The average velo on it was 91 miles an hour. The curveball, the minimum velo on the curveball, Jules, which you don't often look at, but the minimum velo on the curve was 69.1 miles an hour. That must be such, and we talk about this every Bassett start, right? It's not a new thing, but it's just wild. It must be so hard for a batter to see a 91 mile an hour sinker and then just 69 yeah. mile an hour curveball.
Such a difference.
That just, I can't imagine how hard it is for you to register that in your brain, knowing what you're looking for. So well done by Bassett. To your point about how the pitches looked, I mean, the sinker looked great, moving all over the plate. I thought the splitter looked particularly good as well. So just very impressed by Bassett and his first start of the year. The bullpen generally also looked great. Maybe with Yariel Rodriguez getting in there, I don't know if I really expected it from Weyrod, but an inning of work from him, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 2 strikeouts. And we knew from the pregame, which Schneider does not ever do on Sundays, yeah. but because Scherzer is placed on the IL and there were some moves made, he did end up speaking to the media in the dugout. And he said in that availability to Ben Schulman, when he asked him this question, that Weyrod and Easton Lucas were both available out of the bullpen. I admit, I'm sure like everyone else, I didn't think they actually use him. Like they could have easily gone to Nick Sandlin for the eighth, Jimmy Garcia having pitched 2 days in a row. And I mean, like the Lovelady Barnes debacle from yesterday kind of essentially forced them to use Jimmy Garcia, because if even one, like if they had gotten like 20 more pitches from them, those two guys combined, Jimmy Garcia probably pitches in this game today.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
But because we got what we got yesterday, no Jimmy. So they bring out Weyrod. And I said to you here in Baseball Control as he was running in, like, he better look real good.
Yep.
Or are people going to be mad because he looked so-so on Thursday in the season opener when the team was getting blown out. And I'll tell you what, he did look good, right? The velo looked terrific, 98.2 miles an hour on the four-seamer, 97.8 miles an hour on the sinker. The command was great. He wasn't really nibbling. And he was confident. Like, the demeanor looked good. And that made me feel a whole lot better about Weyrod versus the version of him we saw on Thursday. And I got to think that will go a long way towards feeling better about him pretty likely starting on Friday versus the Mets, with what John Schneider said pregame.
Yeah, and it's, you know, even when he was falling behind, I believe there was one batter there, he fell behind 3-0, and you just, the confidence did not waver. And he knew what it was that he was looking for, what he was trying to do. He came back, he pounded the zone with just trusted the velo in that spot, which is way easier said than done, show, especially against a lineup like this with the game as close as it was. But he trusted himself. He trusted the game plan, worked well with Tyler Heineman as well, who had a big day for the Blue Jays. And I would be a lot more confident to give him a start, albeit it's probably going to be a short start,
sure.
But way more confident to do so now after seeing this side of Y-Rod, which we certainly saw some of last year as well, show. When he was pitching well, this is what he did. And when he wasn't pitching well, unfortunately, it was just a lot of walks and a lot of home runs, right? So you kind of still don't know the version of Yariel Rodriguez you're going to get. Today, we definitely got the best version of him. And remember, this is how he made his name in Japan. It was those situations. It was the high leverage spots as a setup guy, sort of the bridging to get to the closer. So just vintage Y-Rod in a way, which is, you know, kind of interesting to say.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
This is his second season in North America, but this is how he found his success elsewhere in the past, and today we saw exactly why. But yeah, with Scherzer on the IL, we do expect Rodriguez to get a start. I believe it's next Friday.
That would be Friday.
That would be Scherzer's next start. So Y-Rod will probably slide in there. Unfortunate situation for Scherzer there, but yeah, you kind of feel a little bit better about having Rodriguez kind of return to this position. And then obviously, you know, keep him loose today, give him an inning, make sure that he is in game shape. Let's put it like that, show, for when the time comes when you need him for a little bit more than that.
Jeff in Toronto on the text line saying, can Yariel start on Friday after pitching tonight? And then Tegan in Acton, Ontario, also asking thoughts on Y-Rod likely joining the rotation with Mad Max on the IL. And it seems like, I think at least to start, the solution, whether it's a Band-Aid or a long-term solution, this season will be Y-Rod in that spot, just like going forward, right? And Schneider did say pregame that Y-Rod was not necessarily stretched out to throw like 100 pitches on Friday, to your point. So if that's the case, I got to imagine it won't be the longest start you'll ever see. Just like, even if he's pitching really, really efficiently, really, really well, he's still only going to pitch, I'm guessing what, like four, it's like a four inning start, a five inning start. And it does, again, beg the question of who goes after Y-Rod. That'll probably be a question that we get more clarity on as we get closer to Friday, because there's an off day on Thursday. So we'll see how that affects the usage of the bullpen starting tomorrow with a three-game set beginning at the Rogers Center tomorrow with the Nationals coming to town. So that it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that to a certain extent. But you're right. I mean, when he's pitching well, Y-Rod had a very good season last year, and then especially towards the end, it started to fall apart. So,
like, I mean, everything else with this team towards the end.
It's a good point. Like, not a lot of things went right down the stretch, and a season where they won 70 something games, right? So I am curious to see how certainly he reacts in terms just physically, Y-Rod, to today's game. But he didn't throw that many pitches, so it's not like he was really taxed. So I'm guessing it will be him on Friday. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. 590-590, name and location. We got a couple texts in already, but still a lot more to get to. We will continue reading your texts on the People's Text Line, but let's go to the phones and let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, welcome to Jays Talk. What's up, man?
Not much, Sheldon. Julia, how you guys doing today?
Good. Always fun when you wrap up a weekend series with a win, right?
Oh yeah, you know what? I've had my eye on this series since Anthony Santander signed with the Blue Jays, because I was thinking to myself, you know what? How will the Orioles be pitched to now with Santander, now the Blue Jays? And the answer was kind of like the same for when the Blue Jays pitched to him. I mean, they just kept hitting everything out, and I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe they may not be as bad as we thought, you know, because, you know, without Santander. And I mean, this was just a strange series all the way around. I mean, the one thing I took from the Orioles side is that with their offense, if they give their pitchers a nice long lead like they did on opening day, and to a certain degree Saturday, they feel a lot more, you know, relaxed, you know what I mean? Because they don't have that ace guy like Corbin Burns was. But if it's a tight game, it's like they're going to have to make, you know, pitches, you know, that are good and not make a mistake. And in this case, you know, they lost two pitchers in this series. So that really, you know, kind of asked a lot for them. But I'm very fortunate that we got a split, because you know what? For me, it's like a clean slate now, because it's 2-2. We didn't lose 3 out of 4 or get swept. And now it's like with Barrios on Tuesday, you know what I mean? He has a chance to to start off fresh, you know. So other than that, I'm very happy with the series, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. I know it doesn't look good, but you know what? Let's just watch, you know.
Hey, Eddie, thanks for the call, man. Always appreciate you joining us. Yeah, I do feel like, I said this off the top, Jules, but it did feel like the Jays were not fortunate to win today, but just given how the lows were when they did lose, obviously opening day was not a great showing by any means. That feels like you're honestly stating it lightly. And then yesterday's game with the collapse and Scherzer on the IL and the bullpen moves, which you can get into certainly as well, which were made before the game today. It felt like a series split against the Orioles, who looked pretty good, all things considered, was something you're fortunate to get. I think, too, because you don't want to fall behind. I mean, it's only four games, so you don't want to fall behind too early in the division this early in the season, right? I mean, even Scherzer has often said this, and other players have said this, too, but, you know, you don't really know what a team is until May. It's March 30th today, so we got one more game tomorrow in March, and then we got the month of April. So you only have, like, 4 weeks, essentially, before you get to this, like, unofficial point where you can start to make real judgments about the team. And, I mean, you can make judgments now if you really want, but just sweeping declarations, I feel like I'm not going to try and make them until we get closer to May. But even so, I think you do feel better about it, because if you were 1-3 taking on the Nationals, even though the Nationals are a little less than team, I mean, you know how it is. Any team can win on any given day, given how the pitchers go or how the offense goes. So, yeah, I'm kind of with Eddie in the sense that you feel good about leaving with a series split. And, I mean, gosh, if not for, I think there was a text here from Tony and Kitchener, if not for maybe a potential bullpen collapse yesterday, maybe you could have been 3-1 to leave this series.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's a tough one to sort of swallow and accept, because I would agree with that. Yesterday felt like a winnable game, even after Scherzer departed a little bit earlier. And I understand we've spoken at length about, you know, the bullpen and the choices and the deployment and all of that, but you drop that game, this game becomes as must win as a game four could be, right? And so the Blue Jays kind of had an obligation to win here, especially when you consider that the Orioles are now off to face the Red Sox, which is, you know, another division clash for Baltimore. But you will start getting some clarity and some separation pretty soon. The Yankees are the Yankees. They're doing what they're doing, and their schedule is a lot different than the Orioles and the Blue Jays to start the season. They're off to face the Diamondbacks next, and then they have the Pirates. I believe that will be their first road series of the year. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the Yankees build some separation early on. These things come and go, and I'm sure that this division will stay close pretty much all the way here. But for the Blue Jays, when you're talking about the first season of the year, starting the season at home for the first time in forever, and what types of advantage that can give you, this was a pretty crucial split for them at the final game of the series. And now with the Nationals coming in, I agree, Sho, that, you know, it is very, very early, but we are going to start, I guess, being able to define a little bit more of certain things. You know, what is it that the offense can actually bring? Can Anthony Santander provide a little bit more with the bat? Can Vladdy provide more than just good contact? Will we start seeing the pop come back a little bit? It always takes a little bit with Vladdy, but I believe that, you know, from the second series on is when you can start to get a little bit more clarity on certain tendencies and certain signatures about this team.
The probables for the National Series in terms of the pitching matchups tomorrow, Monday, Bowden Francis versus Canada's own Michael Soroka, which I'm quite excited to see. Tuesday is Jose Berríos versus Trevor Williams. And Wednesday, which is probably the premier pitching matchup of this series, is Kevin Gausman versus Mackenzie Gore. And if you haven't seen the highlights from what Mackenzie Gore did in his
my
first start
goodness.
Of the year, oh my good Lord, he carved that team. I think it was the Phillies.
Right
he
on.
Carved them up. So I think you want to go watch those highlights. But Kevin Gausman and Gore having the swing and miss in their game that they do, that should be a lot of fun. Maybe a very pretty quick game, which I think Blair and Barker will be happy about on Wednesday. Let's go back to the text line, Jules, 590-590, name and location. Let's see. Tim and Hamilton, why Rod was brilliant. I'm not going to lie. When Mountcastle came up with a man on in the eighth, I was pretty sure it was all over. To see him make quick work of Holiday right after was killer. This one's from Shane in Brockville. Shane, call me Captain Obvious, but if why Rod can command his fastball and look like he did today, he may be useful after all. He is so inconsistent. So I still need to see this a few more times before he is in the circle of trust. Totally valid. Mark from Sudbury, Y-Rod, he had one good inning, so you're both willing to forgive everything and are good for a start. Make it make sense, please. Totally different things. See, for me, it's not that I'm willing to forgive everything. So I don't think that's what I said. I think it's more that the Blue Jays have no choice but to start Yariel Rodriguez at this point. Like, what? Yes. Y-Rod could have come out here today and gotten absolutely shelled, and he was probably still going to pitch a good chunk of the game on Friday, whether it was as a starter or following Easton Lucas or vice versa, right? Like, he was going to be involved in that Friday game no matter what, because there just aren't a lot of other choices right now. All I mean is, after what you saw from Y-Rod to end last year, which was not super positive, right? And then in his first appearance this year, which albeit was only for like a handful of pitches, essentially, but he still gave up some runs on Thursday in a game that the Blue Jays got blown out in and all the energy got like sucked right out of the building, essentially. For him to come out today and look better, I just think was generally important. I don't think it necessarily means I think he's going to be a Cy Young contender. That's not what I'm saying. It's just... because you have no choice, I think you just want to feel good about Y-Rod's place right on the team, like right now going into Friday. And I feel better about it. I'm not saying he's going to be like the new ace of this team by any means.
For sure. And don't get me wrong, I'm never ready to forgive. I can hold a grudge for years, let alone a couple of outings. But this is about the trust, about the confidence, about how much you can actually rely on a guy. And doing what he did today in a pressure spot, in pretty much, you know, the most, some of the most pressure that Y-Rod has probably faced in his major league career, for him to deliver, it's good news for the Blue Jays. You're right, Sho. It's probably going to be him no matter what on Friday. It was probably going to be him even if he, you know, got credit with the loss today. It was probably going to be him just because this is where we are and these are the options that present themselves. The Blue Jays would rather have a guy like Rodriguez right now and let, say, a Jake Bloss continue his development naturally at AAA. He has not pitched this year yet. So that's just where we are. Now, to go back to you, to a point that you made earlier, Sho, about, you know, it's Y-Rod and then what for that game on Friday, I believe that probably the score is going to dictate a lot of that, right? If you bring out some more trusted arms after he has done his day, which is probably going to be short as far as starts go, and if not, if it's a blowout on either side, then you can maybe think about bringing out an Easton Lucas and giving him a little bit more of a leash or things along those lines. I believe that what the Blue Jays do next after Y-Rod in that game is going to be pretty score dependent, as well as, you know, all the other factors that are involved in bullpen decisions.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones, Jules. Let's go to Mike in Cambridge. Mike, what's on your mind, man? Welcome to Jay's Talk.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks very much, Sho. I want to, first off, just congratulate Julia on becoming, a full-time member of the team.
I'm looking forward to
Blue Jays at Talk Plus with you and Blake. So way to go. It's well-deserved.
Much appreciated. That's very, very nice.
Now, regarding, I hate being negative on this day because it was fun to watch that game. But I'm still the producer. I think, like, Scherzer, I'm getting tired of everybody saying how sorry they are for him. I kind of feel like maybe we've got a legal case. Like, this guy had this injury all last year. He made 9 starts. I'm assuming he had to pass a medical, but I feel like he stole $15.5 million from the Jays. 3 innings. And now, is he going to fight through it? No, it has to be 100%. He's 4,000 years old. It's never going to be 100%. And honestly, like, I've heard no one in the media. I know he's a warrior. I know he's been great. I love the guy. But nobody's commenting on the fact that, you know, we signed him. He took the $15.5 million, and he's got an injury that dates back to last year. What do you guys think?
Hey, Mike, appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us. You know, I want to read another text also, because I think this plays into what Mike's saying. The text from Clay in Scarborough. So Clay says, a longtime Jays fan here. I'm also a licensed physiotherapist in Canada for the last 17 years. I'll have to make a note of that for myself, Clay. I'm bothered by the fact that Max thinks a thumb injury links to his lat. In all my years of practice with athletes and others, I've never heard of a correlation between the two. I think this is a cop-out. And to be honest, I'm unsure as to why. But being physically active myself and 40-plus years of age, I will say it hurts my back to tie my laces, but I don't blame my thumb. I'd like to see and hear the explanation as to why a thumb and the lat are related. Thank you. And so that's from Clay. Go ahead, Julius.
Yeah, I do have, somewhat of a report in that. It's not necessarily that he's saying that it's directly related, but it is that he had to change his delivery a little bit in order to compensate for the thumb, and that created the lat discomfort. And the IL stint, I'm pretty sure, is just thumb inflammation, but the lat situation would be just, you know, trying to compensate for that, you create a different problem, which, to Mike's point, is just... that comes with age, that comes with wear and tear. And if you're trying to make tweaks on the fly, it's probably going to show up elsewhere, right?
Yeah, I just generally think that wear and tear for Scherzer is just, again, generally related to him being old. Honestly, I think that's what it is. But to Mike's point about like the knowledge that he was dealing with an injury, not just when it cropped up in the spring, but the knowledge that he was dealing with an injury pre him signing with the Blue Jays has got to have been possessed by the team, 100%. Right? Like, they clearly knew. Like, they must have known. And I mean, he was talking to the media. I remember I was on that conference call when he was the Zoom call when he was talking to the media about the is he healthy? Is it all behind you? And he's like, yeah, it was a nerve issue. It's fine. It's all good. And I believe him. But it's also, he clearly was not 100% then, and they felt they could manage it. All right. Like, I mean, if you feel you can manage it, that's your decision. I'm not a medical expert, so I can't make a prognosis on that. But I still can't help but think that if they knew this, and then the day of his start yesterday, he felt discomfort before the game even started, and then said, you know, oh, well, you know, we can still manage this with the players we have on the roster. Like, Yarbrough's release is still going to bother a lot of people, and it still kind of bothers me, honestly. And again, I know Ryan Yarbrough's release, at least in part, was partially to do right by the guy because, you know, he would likely have been DFA'd. Like, if all was going well, he would have been likely DFA'd when Swanson or Burr returned because of how they felt about Yariel Rodriguez. But, like, they knew Scherzer wasn't right. And I just can't help but think that you could have insulated yourself from this situation a little bit more, that they now find themselves in where we're talking about Weyrod starting on Friday and Easton Lucas being the guy, and you call up Jake Bloss, and how much does Eric Lauer play into the, you know what I mean? Like, you're suddenly having all of these conversations, and it feels like it was eminently avoidable because you knew from before he even pitched for the very first time in the spring that he wasn't 100%.
Right. And listen, if you get a little bit of an extended version of what we saw today from Weyrod, then you can look back and say, we still did the right thing. But if you don't, then things start to get a little bit more interesting. And can Easton Lucas find his stuff at the major league level at this point? He hasn't so far, but... you know, are you willing to give him more of a chance than, say, Yarbrough? It's going to be a pretty fascinating show. The Blue Jays can come out of this looking pretty smart. They can come out of this looking not so smart. And you know, this may be something that one of those moves that you don't expect to be talking about as much as we have. But there's a good reason why we are. As for, you know, the injury concerns with Scherzer, we have heard him speak about, you know, I was honest from the start. I did the medicals and the team and Ross Atkins saying things along the lines of, yes, we knew, we were aware. And based on our assessments, you know, things were going to be fine and we were going to work with the player to make sure that he was ready to go. And obviously the best laid plans, right, Joe? It's tough to predict. Even with a younger guy, it's always tough to predict. But It does seem like the Blue Jays needed a little bit more of a contingency plan. We'll see how this one turns out for him. So far, so good. I think that we're going to start getting this this answer in more of a concrete way on Friday when Yariel Rodriguez starts in place of Max Scherzer.
Yeah, I think you can draw some conclusions from what you saw from Weyrod, but it's such a... there's such short outings for him in relief that I'm not sure, for me, like, if you are going to treat him as a starter, I'm not sure you can make the exactly. And that's the point from, I believe it was Mark and Sudbury,
for sure,
that Mark was making, right? So it's not an apples to apples comparison. No. So, yeah, I think we'll be able to judge a little more maybe a little bit more completely, let's say on Friday. Let's go back to the text line though, Jules. 590-590, name and location. Oliver in Beaver Lodge, Alberta. Oliver says, Heinemann steps up. Go Jays, go. And I got to say, Tyler Heinemann pimping the ever-loving crap out of the home run, just his second career home run. You and I were talking about the roster during the game here, and like Heinemann, Straw being 8-9 batters, I think came up, and how, you know what, doesn't look great.
Yeah,
you don't feel great about that for contact purposes or getting on base purposes or really anything.
Yeah.
And then like what? 15 minutes later, Tyler Heinemann absolutely annihilates that ball. Now, again, I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of that from Tyler Heinemann. It was like a hanging slider that he just caught. But good for him. I mean, good for the guy, right? He was really jacked up. You could see him. He was like, he did the bat flip. He was rounding bases, like just screaming around, screaming to himself. He was in the dugout
right.
with David Schneider. They were clearly admiring. We couldn't see what was on the iPad, but they must have been admiring the home run. So I'm happy for the guy. But I don't think that changes anyone's opinions on him by any means, you or I or any of the listeners. But
yeah.
I am happy for him that he got a pretty big career highlight, considering that he's been playing since 2019 and this is only his second career home run.
And listen, if you know, on days when he's starting, if every now and again he catches a hanging slider like that, and you know, if he's seeing the ball well enough to do something with it, then the Blue Jays are going to be pretty happy, right? And it's not like he is this team's primary catcher, far from it. This is Alejandro Kirk's team. And whenever you can get some offense out of a guy like that, then that's pretty much all you can ask for, Sho. And he should admire that homer. It was pretty impressive. 386 feet. You know, it's in I just saw on Twitter, he was talking, or on X, pardon me, he was talking to Hazel May after the game, and basically he said that he blacked out right after, which I believe, because that's got to be the adrenaline is probably going very, very high in that moment. It's definitely a career highlight reel for Tyler Heinemann, that home run that pretty much ensured the Blue Jays win there.
There's another text I wanted to get to. It was about, let's see, it was about... Here it is from Ken in Kincardine. Ken, appreciate it. I also mispronounced this earlier in the pregame show, so I appreciate you not being too mad. But Ken from Kincardine, he says, say what you will about the offseason, that Jimenez play in the ninth and Hoffman close, he is nasty. Yeah, I did want to talk a little bit about Jeff Hoffman before we take a quick break here, Jules. An inning of work, no hits, no walks, 2 strikeouts, 18 pitches, 12 of them strikes. So he gets the ball on the ground to start. Like Ken says, we see a gem of a play by Andrés Giménez. It was a roller out to the shortstop side of second base, and he crosses over to get that ball and just throws a seed to Vladdy for the first out. And then you get Hoffman gets 3 straight splitters to get, I believe it was Kerstad for a K. And then Gary Sanchez, I'll give Sanchez some credit. He battled for a while to end the game, including putting some solid contact on a ball that just went foul. But Hoffman gets Sanchez on the slider to end the game. He looked good. Like I think Hoffman, there was a concern yesterday about, okay, oh, are you going to see a lot of Hoffman saving games if the middle inning relief can't get you to a save situation? But we did get that today. And I feel good about this early on, because we saw Hoffman yesterday as well for his debut in the regular season. I feel good about it very, 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 very early. The smallest of sample sizes, literally 2 appearances and 2 games. But in a way, I haven't often felt when the Jays put out closers in the Vladdy Bo era. The closest we've come is Jordan Romano. And Jordan Romano, I love him. He's from Markham. He's Canadian, the Markham maniac. And I wish him the best in Philly 1,000%. But he also made it a bit of an adventure, right?
Always
like
it
always felt like you had your heart in your throat a little bit when Romano went on the mound, which could be kind of exciting. Could also be the reason I have some more gray hairs, right? So I think Hoffman makes it a little more boring, which I think can only be viewed as a good thing.
Yeah, and the stuff looked great. The velocity on the fastball was very much on point. You know, not a ton of pitches, 18 pitches, 6 of them were fastballs, maxed out at 97.4. Pretty impressive. The splitter, as advertised, generating a bunch of swing and miss there. You know, obviously this is a guy who is he has the potential to be such an elite closer, Sho, because he has 3 pitches that can really generate swings and misses, and we saw all 3 of them today. The slider coming in as well and playing a part for Hoffman in this save. And you do want to see it happen with a little bit more, I guess, frequency. He has never held the role of a, you know, undisputed closer in his career before, but this is a fine way to start that opportunity. We kind of saw everything that the Blue Jays saw in Hoffman that made them go out and get him this offseason. So certainly a good first save show, and it should be the first of many here.
Let's hear from John Schneider. John Schneider spoke about Jeff Hoffman and his terrific outing today. And again, I've been largely impressed by Hoffman. Again, small sample size. I totally get it. It's four games. You want to wait. Larger sample sizes. That's just like how baseball is as a sport, right? Hoffman impressed in a way that I don't think we see very often from Blue Jays closers in this era of Blue Jays baseball. So let's hear it. Here's the skipper talking about Hoffman's outing.
Swing and miss stuff, you know. Doesn't hurt to have Jimenez behind you up the middle there for that play. But, yeah, man, he's good. He's been good for a number of years. And it's nice to know that he's got three pitches to beat you with. So he's got a good demeanor about him. His stuff is really, really good. And love having him.
So that's John Schneider speaking to the media about Jeff Hoffman. So let's see. He used seven splitters today, including those three straight to get Kershjad. He used 6 four-seamers. 4 sliders, and he threw 1 sinker. But the four-seamer topped out today at 97.4 miles an hour. Yesterday, when he threw one of the four-seamers, I believe it topped out at just over 98. So he has the swing and miss and the velo. I mean, we often complain that part of the Blue Jays bullpen never really had the gas. And him and Jimmy Garcia, who obviously didn't pitch today, it certainly looks like they do.
Yep.
Let's take a quick break here, Jules. And on the other side, we'll go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. We'll go back to the phones as well, if you still care to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. And we'll throw out that question to give away the Bo Bichette Layered City Connect giveaway. So lots to come on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. That's Julia. I'm Sho. We're back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Sure did. Yeah, he's been working on it all winter. I don't think he practiced it right-handed. I think he's only practiced it left-handed, but he was very excited to put the jacket on. I can tell you that. I don't know if the cameras or the microphones caught that, but huge swing, obviously. You know, you get an add-on run there. That's big.
That's John Schneider talking about the bat flip from Tyler Heineman, which he really pimped. My goodness. But hey, if you only hit 2 career home runs, that was your second ever. I mean, I would probably do the exact same thing.
Hard
to blame him for that.
And he had to wait quite a bit of time. So I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that right now.
Yes, we will. We're going to get to the giveaway question in a mere seconds here. But you are listening to Blue Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. We're here for another 20 minutes or so. So still some time to give us a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. Before we do that, Jays Talk brought to you by Bet365. You can download the Bet365 app for today's baseball odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. Let's do a quick check-in on the American League East. So the Yankees, who have now scored 32 runs in their past 2 games, they demolished the Brewers again. Aaron Judge hitting another home run today. Jazz Chisholm Jr. hitting 2 home runs. They beat the Brewers 12-3 after winning 20-9 or 20-6 yesterday, whatever it was. But they have scored a lot of runs. They're 3-0 atop the division. The Tampa Bay Rays, they beat the Rockies 6-4 earlier today, again down in at Steinbrenner Field. Obviously, the Blue Jays and the Orioles are both 2-2. And the Red Sox, they opened their season against the Rangers, and they did lose today, 3-2. So the Red Sox, who are like the sexy pick to win the American League East, have started the season at the bottom of the division. They are 1-3, but again, it's early on in the year. But that is the Bet365 standings update on Jays Talk. All right, let's get to, Jules, the giveaway. So I mentioned before, on Friday, the giveaway was a Bo Bichette Layered City Connect jersey. So it's essentially like a, once again, a jersey on top of like a thin, they're sewn into one another, but a thin long sleeve red hoodie, which is what they mean by a layer. Thanks to Tom Young for getting it for us. So here's the question. So all you got to do is answer the question via the text line, 590-590, name and location, and we'll be off. So Tyler Heineman hitting his second career home run today. Again, a missile just into the seats. He hit his first career home run in 2019 when he was playing for the Marlins. Name the pitcher he hit his first career home run off of. Okay, text us that guy's first and last name to 590-590, and you absolutely must include your own name and location, and you will be entered into a draw to win the Beaubichette Layered City Connect giveaway. So again, who did Tyler Heineman hit his first career home run off of? Again, it was in 2019 when he was playing for the Marlins. All you got to do is name that pitcher and text us that pitcher's name, first and last name, to 590-590. I'll say this. I did not expect this name. It's someone who is currently in Major League Baseball. It's someone who I think we all consider to be a very, 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 very good pitcher.
Certainly.
So, yeah, text us that guy's name again to 590-590, and we'll enter the draw. And I'll reach out to you via the text line if you are the winner, and we'll announce the person's name when you and I are back on Jay's Talk on Saturday. I wanted to get to a couple things really quick in the last couple of minutes before we say goodbye, Jules. And we haven't talked about Brendan Little. And we talked about Y-Rod. We talked about Jeff Hoffman. I feel like it's like a disservice not to talk about Brendan Little.
100%.
I mean, he came in and he was really, really good in the seventh inning, right? He gets all three batters, including a very smooth grab on the comebacker to end the inning. I mean, we knew he was the number one lefty, like quote unquote number one lefty in the pen, and he looked good. And I remember you and I had conversations at the end of last season where Little had shown enough, and Joey from North Battleford mentioning the Brendan Little conversation. So kudos to you, man, on the text line, that Little had shown enough to continue being a part of the solution for the bullpen this year. And knowing the pen has been taxed more than expected through four games, it's good to see him come in and make quick work of the batters he faced, especially at the top of the order.
Yeah. First of all, yeah, good to see that he's 100% back to health, apparently. A little bit of a scare on Friday for Little, but he comes in here. He's so efficient with the way that he pitched. Didn't get any strikeouts this time around. Got two his last time up, but you can just see how well this stuff is playing for him. And he's such an important part of this bullpen right now, Sho. And not just right now. He's probably going to be an important part of this bullpen for the entire season. Mm-hmm. It's not just that there aren't that many options for left-handed pitchers out of that pen. It's also that the stuff does look like he has figured something out to make him a reliable reliever at the major league level. It wasn't a mirage last year. It looks like this is just the pitcher that he is. Kind of a young guy. This is just his third major league season, and really he only saw two-thirds of an inning with the Cubs in 22. Comes in last year, establishes himself somewhat with the Blue Jays, and now just, you know, I believe he's kind of rising up the rankings a little bit, Sho.
It's funny because I remember when we were doing our roster discussion in the offseason, like during the spring, and I remember having the conversation with you about like who is on the bubble for the arms, right? So you list all five starters, you get to Hoffman and Garcia and Sandlin, like I think it's like those are no-brainers. And I remember we get to Brendan Little, and it was funny because he was also kind of viewed as a no-brainer, right? I'm not sure that was necessarily the case at the end of last year, but and I think he played well at the end of last year. I'm not saying he didn't. It's just, you know, there are some question marks about how at the end of last year the Blue Jays going forward were going to rebuild the bullpen to a certain extent after them being not just mediocre but like historically bad essentially. And I think there was a question going into the spring even the what Brendan Little would look like, but they almost treated him the way he was used even in the spring as a guy who would, oh yeah, like no question, he's making the team. And again, it's partially because he's one of the only like real left-handed pitchers on the roster. But I mean, gosh, he looked real good. Now, because they kind of went into the season, into Thursday's game, with Little and Lovelady being the two lefties, Sandlin kind of like a pseudo lefty because he throws that splitter kind of in that Trevor Richards-ish role. But put him aside, in terms of actual left-handed relievers, it was really just the two of them. And then Lovelady, for those who missed it, I'm sure everyone saw this, but this morning got DFA'd, and Mason Fluharty, another lefty, got called up. And then, of course, you got the other move with Scherzer on the IL, Easton Lucas getting called up as well, his contract being selected for the major leagues. But, I mean, I think Mason Fluharty, well, we didn't see today, obviously, but I'm interested to see, again, what situations they use Fluharty and Little in going forward, because Schneider said this in the pregame show, Jules, that they don't only feel like they can use either of those two guys to left-handed pitchers. Like, they feel confident enough, left-handed batters, pardon me, that they feel confident that you could use both of those guys to pretty much either batters, right or left.
Yeah, and we saw, I believe we saw a little against Rutschman, who's a switch hitter, but was obviously hitting right-handed against him. And that turned out pretty well, too. It's just, some awkward contact, that sinker really working for him. And, you know, I would still put Little maybe a little bit above Fluharty, at least for now, in the tier system or however you want to categorize this bullpen, just because Little does come with more experience, obviously. He showed that he can do it. Last year, had a pretty good spring show. It was just a couple of outings, really, where he allowed a couple of runs to score. And other than that, just zeros across the board. So this is definitely, it looks like a guy who is coming into his own as a major league reliever. And you start to feel more comfortable, putting him out there in different situations as he shows you that he can handle it, that he can handle the top of a lineup like the Orioles, not once, but twice in a series. And, you know, kind of unfortunate that he had to leave a little bit early when he did on Friday. But you do want to be very, very careful. It's so early in the season, and if you have the rested arms available, probably good to be more conservative in that case and really give a guy a chance to get better and get 100%. Just a cramp issue, and it's clear from today's outing that he's pretty much back to health. And if I'm not mistaken, he didn't even reach double digits. He threw 9 pitches today, 8 of them strikes, just a clean inning of work. So really, you could not ask for anything more of a guy like that, just as clean and as simple as a manager could hope for in order to hand it over to the setup guy and the closer later on. So pretty much textbook by Little today.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, Jules. Let's squeeze in a couple more calls on Jay's Talk here. Adam in Thornhill giving us a call. Adam, what's up? Welcome to Jay's Talk.
Hey, show. Hey, Julia. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Guys are doing a great job, as always.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, man. A long time no talk.
Long time no talk. Okay, you remember me. Yeah. Okay, great. So, yeah, I called in last year in June. And I told you that the Blue Jays should sign Vladimir Guerrero to a 14-year, $427 million deal, $1 million more than Mike Trout. And this is before he went on his run. And you thought that was a little bit high at the time. Jeff Blair said that he would offer, on the program with Barker, he said that he would offer Guerrero maybe the Matt Olson contract, 8 years, 160. And I said that was way too low and way too late for it. And then Guerrero went on a heater, and I called back a month later, and you moved up your number, I believe, of somewhere around 10 and 270. And now here we are, and it's looking like it's going to be $500 or $600 million. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get more as he, this is the best Jays prospect they've ever developed internally. I'm not talking about Alomar, obviously, who was traded over from another organization, but this is the best Blue Jay prospect they've ever had in 47 or 48 years of this club. They need to sign him, and frankly, they need to sign Bo. He's already got, 7 or 8 hits this series. He's right back to where he was, and I just don't understand why the one bad year that he had last year nullifies the previous 5 years where twice he led the American League in hits. But yet, if a player has a little bit of success like a Bowden Francis and 9 good starts, then all of a sudden we think that's real. I'm not saying that Bowden Francis's success isn't real. I'm just saying we're going to assume that just what you've done for me recently is the track record of who you are as a player. Well, Bo's done everything, so they need to lock him up as well. It really concerns me with them not the front office not doing either this offseason. And, yeah, some of the moves are good and everything, but I still think that for a team that has, in all fairness to Rogers, I mean, they've given them the money. They did not give Alex Anthopoulos the money. So this front office has absolutely had the support of Rogers. You can't say that Rogers hasn't ponied up here. They have. And I just don't think you're getting enough for between $250 and $300 million.
No, that's fair. I think that's totally fair, Adam. Let me ask you this. I will challenge your assertion of Vladdy being the best prospect the team's ever had. I will only say the guy that immediately comes to mind was Doc. I think Doc is the only other guy. What do you think?
All right. So let's say I'm wrong and you're right.
Right.
Okay. So that's the second best prospect in almost 50 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So either even if you want to say 1 or 1A, or you want to go with Doc, that's fine. the reality is that these guys don't grow on trees. You're talking about once on average, if you're saying those are the two best, then that's two every 25 years, two every quarter century. You got to keep them.
Yeah.
And here's one more thing. Let me just say this. The reason the Yankees are the Yankees is because when they walk out to Monument Park, you see the history of Mantle and DiMaggio and Vera and so forth. So then when you added Derek Jeter and Mariano, history, well, we've had some wonderful players who are Hall of Famers, but like for a flash in the pan, a 1 year, or Roger Clemens for 1 or 2 years, or Winfield in age 40, or a Scherzer, for example, at age 40. But he's not going to go to the Hall of Fame as a Blue Jay.
Right.
He's going to go to the Hall of Fame as where he had success. So we need guys who are going to be here, even if the last couple of years of the contract are painful, and set that precedent as having a history of legendary players.
Would you give the Jays, would you give Vladdy $550 if that's what it took?
At this point, you don't have a choice.
Right.
It's not. I don't think it's necessarily worth it. I would have signed him, like I said,
right.
Last year, the year before, but at this point, you don't have a choice. So what's the difference of, say, $35 million AAV or $38? I mean, there's a point where it gets stupid. I'm not going to give him $51, but if it's a difference of $2, $3, $4 million bucks a year, I mean, that's one bench player. Like, you know, if you're paying $6.4 million to Miles Straw, and Vladdy wants 38, and you're only willing to go to 35 AAV. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, just get it done. It's ridiculous.
Hey, Adam, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks, as always, for joining us. Nice to hear from you again. Yeah, it's true, Jules. So I'll give Adam some credit. When I was doing a lot of the, like, late-night ones by myself, Adam, like, clockwork would call in. So I appreciate him calling back so we could chat with him. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, I'll say I think Delgado would probably be up there as well when it comes to Blue Jays prospects, like homegrown prospects
for
to a certain
sure.
extent. But he wasn't drafted, but either way, he was signed by the Blue Jays. So
right,
I think you count him. And I'm biased because Delgado and Doc Holliday are 1 and 2 for me, my favorite
Vladdy
players ever.
Vladdy wasn't drafted either.
And Vladdy wasn't drafted either. So I think I think it's reasonable to include those guys. But still, to Adam's point, I mean, even at worst, if Vladdy is the third best prospect homegrown player the team has ever had, then yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I still think, like, there is an upper limit, again, to what he said. And for me, I want to say, look, I had said when this, like, quote-unquote deadline in the spring had passed and he hadn't signed the deal, I had said maybe $550 was, like, the upper limit of what I would do personally, and sounds like they're in that ballpark. Bob Nightingale had said in his column on USA Today, which he puts out every Sunday, he had said that the Blue Jays are, I think the word he used was inching. I think they said either inching closer to a deal. So I guess that, you know, it's good that dialogues are open and that this deadline was, like, fake, I guess, because they're still negotiating as hard as they were before this deadline. So there you go. But I don't know, with Vladdy, I wonder, because Rogers has given the team, the front office, the money. At the same time, like, no team, I would say, unless maybe even the Dodgers. I mean, but if their upper limit is way higher than any other teams, but no team has unlimited money.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to sign Vladdy to a deal where he's getting paid, like, at least on a yearly basis, like $45 to $50 million, like, that will, to a certain extent, if you're not getting value from the rest of the roster, kind of hamstring you a little bit in roster building. I got to think, too, I mean, if the Blue Jays offer Vladdy, like, $550 million with, like, $500 million or something in present-day value, and he still says no, I mean, gosh, I almost believe he's not going to sign with the Blue Jays at that point. Because what else can you do at that point?
Well, at that point, then just go out and test free agency and see what the Steve Cohens of the world may have in store for you. But I have to agree that at this point, it's almost looking like the Blue Jays don't have a choice. And, you know, if this deal does not happen, it is not going to go down very nicely or easily for this fan base or for really the team. But you hear Mark Shapiro saying things such as, there is a clear alignment here on the desired outcome. We wish for Vladdy to become one of those legacy players, you know, the guys who start and end their career with the same team. All of the pieces are in place, Sho, and it is also encouraging to hear reports coming out saying that you know, the negotiations are ongoing. This is not something that we have seen a ton of with the Blue Jays, but Vlad is a special case for all intents and purposes. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe he does want to test free agency. Maybe he does want to see what the market has to to offer before he makes a firm commitment. We saw that from Aaron Judge as well, right? A few years ago. It's not unprecedented for a guy to go out in free agency and come back and sign with his team. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that all year, I feel like, Sho.
We got a couple of that last-minute text here from Reagan in Regina. Delgado is the best position player ever developed by the Jays. And Paul in Toronto, hey, Sho, what about Steve, Bell, Barfield? Only two prospects. Look, I'm not saying other guys aren't good. That's not what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
But I have a special fondness for Doc specifically.
For sure.
And yeah, I got Delgado in there. I also think Dave Steve should be in the Hall of Fame. I do. I admit he should be in the Hall of Fame. Like that, the guy he got a little bit of a raw deal.
Pretty fascinating discussion as well. But I have to agree with you. Yeah.
But that does it for us here on Jays Talk. Appreciate all the texts. We got like almost 200 texts about the Tyler Heinemann question. So I will take my time to just quickly randomize that and get a winner. But we will announce a winner on the next edition of Jays Talk. Blue Jays baseball, as always, is brought to you by the local family-owned Crown House Control Centers in Lévis and West Quebec City. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Pat Malacaro as well, stop by the booth, Tom Young, Austin Mackey, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. The Nationals series starts tomorrow to begin the weekend. It is a weekdays, which means Blair and Barker will be along for that series. Happy 65th birthday to Jeff Blair. He's the man. I love working with you, Jeff. There's no chance you are listening, but I hope you are enjoying your birthday wherever you are. And happy Eid Mubarak to everyone out there. I'm going to go have some dinner with my family at my parents' house. Julia and I will be back for Saturday and Sunday of the Mets series. Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you later.